And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. A little bit late of a start this morning. Had a power outage in the Murrayville area overnight, so getting caught up on some technical issues there. However, we have got a busy show planned for you this morning, and we start off with a couple of local stories here across southeastern North Carolina. First off, this is some very interesting news. Former New Hanover County Commissioner, Democrat Jonathan Barfield, plans to run for the mayor of the city of Wilmington. Barfield told WECT News yesterday that he will make his official announcement coming up on Monday. That's March the 3rd. Barfield lost his county commission seat last November after spending 16 years on the board. And with that, Bill Saffo, currently the mayor of Wilmington, the longest serving mayor in the city's history. He's been the mayor for almost 20 years. There's been questions over the last couple of election cycles whether Mayor Saffo was going to run again for re-election. Now you've got another Democrat challenger and Jonathan Barfield throwing his hat into the race. It is going to be a very interesting municipal election here across southeastern North Carolina. Filing for all of those offices begin in July. There is no primary because they are nonpartisan municipal elections. Candidates file in July, and then everybody's name is on the ballot come November. So we'll be keeping very close to, of course, the local election news as it is relevant to you right here on the show. Looking at some other news this morning, some interesting details coming out of the Wilmington Police Department. This is unfortunately nothing new. Donnie Williams, who has been the Wilmington Police Chief for the last couple of years, he has not necessarily led the organization in the best way. There has been a lot of controversy from people within the department. The city has spent tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on consulting companies to try and address the issue. And we learned back just a couple of weeks ago that Police Chief Donnie Williams announced his plans to retire from the department. But without that taking place, there are still a lot of that is going on within the Wilmington Police Department. And there is a very lengthy article this morning over at WHQR by Ben Schottman, a very well-written piece about the saga that is the Wilmington Police Department. I've got my own interesting story that I wasn't allowed to talk about in the past in regards to the WPD that I'll get into here. I wanted to read through Ben's story this morning because it does a really good summary of wrapping up the entire situation as Donnie Williams looks to exit from the Wilmington Police Department. It starts off by saying this. Last summer, Wilmington paid a third-party firm $75,000 to investigate the leadership of the police department. Not long after the investigation wrapped, the city's manager office approved two consulting contracts to address WPD issues, including those identified in the investigation. So we're taxpayers in the city of Wilmington already on the hook for well over $100,000 in regards to these investigations into leadership, aka the police chief, Donnie Williams. Chief Williams announced his plan to retire in January following an external investigation into his administration and vocal criticism from former officers. Now, these are individuals that worked within the Wilmington Police Department that had very strong criticisms of Donnie Williams and of his leadership. Documents provided by the city now show his announcement came amid ongoing efforts to address a host of issues in the department. Ah, yes. Times get a little tough. I'll just retire from the job. Instead of cleaning up my act, instead of fixing some of the procedural and structural issues within the department, I'm just going to leave. Chief Williams has consistently pushed back on critics as racist or racially motivated, garnering support from the black community across Wilmington. His critics reject the idea that their complaints had anything to do with race. Williams also said his retirement was long planned, claiming he had committed to a five-year tenure and not staying past 2025 when city council hired him as the chief. No one on city council responded to Ben Schottman's request for comment. It does appear that Williams is risking significant retirement benefits by staying on the job. So this is unfortunately a typical situation. Criticism being levied against somebody in an elected position, or in this case, an appointed position, a hired position, a position of authority, the police chief for the city of Wilmington, Donnie Williams. Criticisms levied against him, and instead of owning the criticism, instead of being a competent leader, what does Donnie Williams do? He claims the people criticizing him are a bunch of racists. Because, you know, that's the approach. To hell with having any sort of accountability for yourself. To hell with being able to take any accountability for your own actions. Just call the people criticizing you racist, and that nullifies the discussion. That nullifies the conversation. Is that the individual you want leading your police department? Donnie Williams is afraid of the media. He does not do interviews. If you'll notice, anytime there's anything WPD related, they send out their public information officer. He is afraid to talk to the media. He is afraid of criticism. And when he gets criticism, and this is something I experienced firsthand, when he gets criticism, he lashes out. On more than one occasion, when I was doing the morning radio show here in town and had criticisms of Donnie Williams, brought forward concerns that were relayed from former officers, both speaking on and off the record, Donnie Williams took his time to send a very heated, lengthy email to my bosses in an attempt to get me to keep quiet about the Wilmington Police Department, to not comment on things that were going on within WPD, to make accusations against me that I was anti-law enforcement because I had the audacity to criticize the police chief. This is the kind of weak leadership that Donnie Williams' department has. I no longer have any of those restrictions. I'm not worried about anybody saying anything to me anymore. Donnie Williams is afraid to face the music. He is a weak, ineffective leader and has been an awful chief of the Wilmington Police Department. Plain and simple. If you can't handle criticism, then don't take the job to be the police chief. If you are unwilling to get out and speak to the public, whether that be TV news, whether that be radio, if you can't do that, don't take the job. Every single time there was an issue with the Wilmington Police Department, you could hear a freaking pin drop in regards to Donnie Williams. He never commented on anything. He was never available. He never wanted to do interviews. He was always MIA. And that to me is unacceptable as somebody in this position. People deserve to feel safe and secure in the community they live in. And when the police chief is scared of his own shadow, it is and is unwilling to speak to the public in a variety of forms, that's a huge problem for me. That shows that you are incapable of being in that position. And that's what Donnie Williams did. And then he criticizes individuals that have the audacity to criticize him. He's a high-profile individual within our community. He is the police chief of New Hanover County's largest city, the city of Wilmington. And when you criticize him, he sends your boss a nasty email in an attempt to shut up your conversation. Instead of, you know, dealing with crime on the city streets, he's listening to radio and firing off responses back and forth. I attempted to meet with the police chief. He did not want me in the meeting. So that's the kind of character that we're dealing with Donnie Williams. None of my criticism I believed was unfair. I offered him the opportunity to correct my wrongs. If he thought that I was in the wrong, the things that I was saying were inaccurate, not only would he not do that, he refused to meet me in face, person to person. He did not want me in a meeting that he set up with my previous employer. That was a bridge too far for Donnie Williams. And it makes sense. I mean, individuals within his own department criticize him, and he just calls them racist. So that's the kind of character we're dealing with the Wilmington police chief. Sayonara, Donnie. Back to Ben Schottman's article over at WHQR. What's clear is that even as William plans to exit, the city is trying to improve a situation at the police department that current and former officers have referred to as dysfunctional. Ah, so it's not just the jackass on the radio that's calling you incompetent. It's your own employees. So looks like maybe I was a little bit right about my criticism. Some have spoken on the record and some off the record discussing the workplace environment anonymously for fear of retaliation, which they are right to do. If they had spoken publicly about Donnie Williams, he would have retaliated against them. He attempted to get me fired because of my criticism of him and the Wilmington Police Department. Not the officers, not the men and women that put their life on the line every day to serve our community, but the dysfunctional, incompetent leadership at the top, aka the police chief. So the fear of retaliation, very real with Donnie Williams. Last fall, the city began contracting with two consulting firms, Wilmington-based Forte Institute and Cary-based AHK Global. Forte Institute, which consults on management issues with a focus on communication, has performed a variety of services for the city in the past, including for the police department. In October, the city began conversations about contracting to work with the command staff at WPD. They moved forward with a $29,550 contract in November based on a 2019 consulting project with the police department, apparently disbanded prior to the retirement of former chief Ralph Evangelis. Forte also reviewed newer concerns, including reporting from WHQR and WECT, as well as the results of the $75,000 third-party investigation into WPD leadership, a report that has been kept under wraps and not even available to city council members. AHK Global, which is run by the city's former HR director, was also hired to work with WPD command staff. The $16,800 contract they received for directed consulting originated in October and approved in November, provides for $1,400 per month for 16 hours or $100 per or $100 after that for up to 12 months. Beyond that, the contract offers no specific scope. However, the city confirmed that AHK Global is also working with WPD command staff. City email records also indicate that that group sat in on several key meetings held by this other group as well, this Forte Institute group that provides some of this consulting as well. Because both contractors involved in professional services, they originated from the city manager's office and did not require or involve any sort of city council approval. So let's get into a little bit of the background. Again, this article over at WHQR this morning. In early 2024, Captain Mike Fanta filed a former HR complaint against Chief Williams as he prepared to retire after nearly three decades in service. In an interview with WHQR, Fanta laid out his specific grievances against Williams and more systemic problems he identified in the city's police and human resource departments. Fanta's complaint pushed Tony Caudle, the city manager, to hire USISS Agency LLC as an outside firm. In May, that group was contracted for $75,000 to initiate a personnel misconduct investigation into alleged violations of the city and police department policies, including harassment, intimidation, bullying, and possibly policy violations in the management of the department. ISS was also tasked with identifying, quote, opportunities for improved leadership and management practices for the city police department, as well as providing, quote, executive coaching and mentoring services to aid in the improvement of the leadership and management within the department. I think I can say pretty confidently that Donnie Williams had no interest in any sort of improving in terms of his leadership or learning better management practices. Again, when people criticized him, he pulled the race card immediately and claimed, well, the people criticizing me are just racist. Their criticisms are not valid. Again, that's the kind of weak leadership we're talking about. By late July, ISS had delivered its report to Tony Caudill's office. Caudill declined to release it to the public, citing personnel law. Caudill also denied requests from city council members who wanted to see the report. Although city council hires police chiefs, they are then moved under the city manager's office, and their personnel files and related documents like this report are protected. That is a huge red flag. I don't care what this management structure is. Oh, well, they're hired and then they're moved. Elected officials in our community that are elected by the residents of the city of Wilmington, who I'll note pay the police chief's salary, the city council's salary, Tony Caudill's salary, everybody's salary within the city. Those elected officials absolutely deserve to see this report. There is no question about that. The idea of personnel, I can understand not releasing it to the public as a whole, because there is likely identifying information or personal information there that would not be appropriate for the public. I'm totally okay with that. I understand how private records work. It's not an issue. However, to not be able to give that report and show that report to members of the city council, that's absolutely absurd. There is a statutory exception which allows information to be released when it's, quote, essential to maintaining public confidence, but it requires the agreement of council and the manager's office, and that hasn't happened. Council reportedly discussed the issue in a specially called closed session in October, a week after WHQR's reporting on the investigation, but council members took no public action on releasing the report. Caudill, for his part, announced in November that he would be retiring this coming May. Mayor Bill Sasso did appear to have been briefed, at least at a high level, on the substance of the ISS report. He declined to discuss specifics, but acknowledged the chief had issues to deal with and that Tony Caudill was taking appropriate measures to address the concerns. On October 10th, about a week after WHQR reported on the city's contract with ISS, Forte founder and chairman Hoop Morgan contacted Clayton Roberts, the city's HR director, and wrote an email saying, quote, "Clayton, we may just resurrect this as a starting place thoughts." Morgan attached a April 2019 PowerPoint presentation outlining consulting work for the Wilmington Police Department, then under Chief Ralph Evangelist. Email records from the city show that Forte used that presentation with some modifications to launch its work with the Williams administration. According to the $29,550 contract with this Forte group, the work included a cohort of 18 employees, including Chief Williams, top command staff, members of the WPD communication team, as well as Kim Carlson, the city's DEI director. Thank God she was involved. These officers were slated to fill out benchmarking and update surveys every 30 days with debriefings afterwards over the course of 6 months. The goal, according to Forte, is to, quote, bring the command staff together as an example and expectation for the entire agency. Forte's 2024 update outlined a number of issues, internal problems, including communication. No, that's a huge issue. Donnie Williams is afraid of his own shadow when it comes to the media. The need for more open door policies and constructive feedback, better mentoring and accountability systems, and a better explanation of the why when the chief makes a decision. Both the 2019 and 2024 presentations make special note of the importance of body language. So, I want to show you a slide from the presentation. And I'm going to show you this slide. For the audio listeners, I'll read over it. And I'm glad that this is being looked into. But I cannot believe Donnie Williams or any any high up staff within the Wilmington Police Department. Individuals who have spent their entire lives. Donnie Williams started as a beat cop in Wilmington, has spent his entire life within the police force. Most of the other command staff spending their entire life in law enforcement need this slide to be presented to them by a consulting group that the city is paying $75,000. But look, just look at this. Body language. It's got a picture of a child, what, probably 4 years old, sitting on a chair with his arms crossed. And it says this: self-awareness / situational awareness, forte interaction reports, forte motivators and demotivators, understanding the complexity behind the positive and negative styles in a profession where being skeptical is also a competency. It can be difficult. This starts at a very young age. This needed to be given to the employees and the high up, the chief of the Wilmington Police Department? A slideshow presentation on body language? I'm sorry, I just can't wrap my head around that. Body language? Can't figure that out? You need to pay a consulting firm to come in and tell you that your body language is important when you're interacting not only with the public, but with your employees within the department? I'll leave that there. Other issues involved both the department and the city's HR department, including a city pay policy that, quote, doesn't value experience, end quote, and an inefficient evaluation process and questionable hiring practices, particularly the psychological element. There's also evidence from staffing frustrations that have plagued many law enforcement agencies, including calls for better retention of good employees and more aggressive lobbying for department needs in the pre-budgeting and budgeting process. The presentation also noted that the department also gives citizens the runaround and doesn't respond reliably. It also suggests using software to track responses to the public. That was one of my big issues in regards to my criticism of Chief Donnie Williams. There would be a shooting, some sort of police activity within the city of Wilmington. We would be told this is an ongoing investigation, which is a fair practice, a common practice, and a legal practice, and we would never hear anything else about it. Irregardless of the issue, so many times in my 3.5 years of covering Wilmington news 5 days a week, 3 hours a morning, WPD issue, something going on, not with the department, but a law enforcement related task within the city. No comment available at this time. And that's it. You have to speak to the public. You are in law enforcement. You interface and interact with the public. The public demands the ability to feel safe and secure in where they live. And part of that is communication and trust within law enforcement. That culture was not created by Police Chief Donnie Williams, not in the slightest. From the public standpoint, and apparently from his own employees, who did not think his management style was very effective and useful. According to invoices and emails from the Forte Institute, the Forte Consulting Group, the consultants also reviewed media reports. One invoice item showed WECT reporting on the Fraternal Order of Police's meeting with Sappho and Councilman Luke Waddell was reviewed in November by an AI by two individuals within the company. In December, Jessica Wolf, the chief client success officer for Forte, reviewed WHQR's hour-long interview with a former Wilmington Police Department member, according to email records. In late November, Morgan spent 3.5 hours reviewing the ISS report. Although that document was previously deemed confidential, the city said appropriate permission was given to provide the report to this company. 2 days later, on November the 26th, Morgan, Wolf, and Ragland met with Williams for 2 hours, and in December, Forte interviewed many other members of the command staff. According to email records with the city, Forte was still invoicing the city. It also appeared Morgan was doing some work with the Wilmington Fire Department, including a mini retreat that was being planned for earlier this month. The city said it wasn't concerned about the viability or the necessity of the consulting contracts because they were for the entire command staff, not just Williams. In a statement, WPD responded to a request for comment from WHQR. They said, quote, WPD has worked with Forte for many years, including prior administrations. The trainings we receive helps individuals understand their leadership style as it relates to how they communicate and how they are perceived. Communication is one of the pillars of police work, and any chance to improve upon those basic skills is beneficial, both internally to the operations of the police department and to serving the public, according to a WPD spokesperson. WHQR also requested comment from the city specifically about whether there were ongoing concerns about WPD command staff and the city's HR process based on some of the comments in Forte's presentation and about whether the city was planning an organizational or policy change. The city responded with a general statement saying, quote, WPD and the City of Wilmington contracts with outside firms like these to help us identify areas in which we can improve and give us tools and resources to perform and serve more effectively, according to a city spokesperson. This is a really good write-up over at WHQR. Ben Schottman did a phenomenal job breaking down this from start to finish. This is a major issue. This has been a major issue for quite some time. Since 2020, when Donnie Williams was hired as the chief of the Wilmington Police Department, these issues have existed. The public confidence, the public trust is at an all-time low. The morale of officers within the department is at all-time lows. That is not a good situation for a police department to be in. I just found myself incredibly disappointed with WPD. Again, not the men and women on the front line, not the great individuals that I've had the opportunity to interact with since my time in Wilmington. Individuals that sung high praise of me, very much appreciative of the things that I covered on the radio, had the opportunity to run into them from time to time. Very, very nice professional individuals. Always appreciated my interactions with WPD. But at the highest level, with a police chief who ran away from cameras, you'll notice he's very rarely interviewed on the news. There's a very big reason for that. He's afraid. He doesn't do radio. He doesn't do other sorts of media. And anytime somebody criticizes him, he lashes out. That is not what you need as the chief of a police department. I wish Donnie Williams well. He has given his life in regards to career and service for the Wilmington Police Department. Hopefully he enjoys his retirement, and I'm hopeful that the city council hires and brings forward somebody that is capable of restoring that public trust within the police department and is also going to change the attitude and hopefully increase the morale within the police department. I have heard internally from officers that are still there about how bad it is right now. They are not satisfied with the leadership. So city council is going to have a huge decision to make in their hiring. And we'll, of course, keep a close eye on that right here on The Nick Craig Show. Full links to this article will be over on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can support the show and get access to bonus content. That does include the daily show notes, and it also includes our monthly hangouts. Those happen once a month. We jump on a Zoom call for an hour or so and discuss the news of the day, the topics. Maybe this WPD story will come up, and that is taking place tonight, 7 o'clock on Zoom. If you are a paid member of the Patreon, $5, $10 a month, you will get you've already got a link in your inbox there with the details for our monthly chat. That'll be taking place tonight, 7 p.m. Make sure you check your Patreon for that. If you're not a member, you still got some time to jump in before tonight. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. Appreciate everybody's support on the program as we continue to roll on. We've got some big news out of Washington, D.C. in regards to the federal workforce. Those details coming up in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Thanks to everybody for joining us live or via podcast this morning. We're now going to transition into some federal news that continues to shock the media and continue to promulgate the news sector. This is, of course, the big changes that are going on within our federal government right now. Donald Trump in his second term has a renewed commitment to correct the wrongs of the federal government to the American people. And this is in regards to the federal workforce. We're just over the last month or so, so much waste, fraud, and abuse has been uncovered. Things that I'm sure many of us thought were the case. We have known for our entire lives that the federal government was full of all of this waste, full of all of this abuse. But there was never really anything to grasp onto. You'd have little reports here and there and audits here and there that would show things weren't correct, but it wasn't widespread. It would blip into the news cycle for a day and then it was gone and then business as usual. That's not been the case in the second Trump administration. The Department of Government Efficiency, led by Elon Musk, directed by President Trump, is absolutely digging under the hood in every single federal agency, in every single department, and trying to figure out what is going on within our government. Why is it so expensive and why is it so freaking inefficient at what it does? Case in point, FEMA, Western North Carolina. That's the only example you need. I could list off examples for the next 3 hours, but that's the most recent. That's the example that has affected so many folks across our state this morning. President Donald Trump yesterday announced another major reduction in the federal workforce, which was announced by the Office of Budget and Management yesterday and reiterated during the first cabinet meeting at his second term within the White House. President Donald Trump held a cabinet meeting yesterday and talked about cutting down the size of government. This is what the president had to say yesterday morning.
We're cutting down government. We're cutting down the size of government. We have to. We're bloated. We're sloppy. We have a lot of people that aren't doing their job. We have a lot of people that don't exist.
A lot of people that don't exist and a lot of people that aren't doing their job. Pretty concerning. The memo states this, quote, "The federal government is costly, inefficient, and deeply in debt. At the same time, it is not producing results for the American public. Instead, tax dollars are being siphoned off to fund unproductive and unnecessary programs that benefit radical interest groups while hurting hardworking American citizens. The American people registered their verdict on the bloated, corrupt federal government on November the 5th, 2024 by voting for President Trump and his promise to sweepingly reform the federal government. On February the 11th, 2025, President Trump's executive order implementing the President's Department of Government Efficiency Workforce Optimization Initiative, catch my breath, commenced a critical transformation of the federal bureaucracy. It directed agencies to eliminate waste, bloat, and insulary issues in order to empower American families, workers, taxpayers, and our system of government itself," the memo continues. "President Trump required that agency heads shall promptly undertake preparations to initiate large-scale reductions in force, consistent with applicable law. President Trump also directed that no later than March 13th, 2025, agencies develop agency reorganization plans." Trump is dead serious about this, and he should be. Because as I've mentioned, and as you are well aware, the situation that we are in right now is completely impractical, for the long term. It is completely unsustainable long term. We cannot continue to borrow and spend money at the clip and the degree to which we're doing it right now. We are borrowing against my grandchildren's children in right now. I don't even have kids, and we're borrowing against my grandchildren's children. Because that's the level of waste, fraud, and abuse within the federal government. That is the level of frivolous, ridiculous spending on stupid nonsense that provides no value. And that's really what this comes down to. Earlier this week, we were talking about the budget session that's going to be taking place here in New Hanover County. We'll see a similar thing in the city of Wilmington. You'll see it up in Raleigh at the State General Assembly. And with all of that, the question needs to be asked, and it's a tough question. I get it. It's not an easy thing. But the question needs to be asked, what are we getting for this? When you spend money on something as a private citizen, as an individual that works hard 40 hours a week, gets all your work done, when you spend your hard-earned money, you are asking yourself, what am I getting for this? What am I getting in return? You do it every single day. You make decisions every single day based on that hard-earned money, whether you drink coffee at home instead of getting $8 coffee out at Starbucks. That's a decision. What am I getting for my money? I can drink coffee for pennies on the dollar at home, or I can spend $8. That's a decision that you make because the money means something. What could you better do with that $8 than spend it on coffee? It's a very basic, simple example that hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans make every single day. Yet in government, this idea of what are we getting for the dollars we're spending seemingly doesn't exist. How often have you heard state, local, federal governments say, oh, we're going to invest $600,000 into this program. What are we going to get? No, that's never the discussion. It's we're going to spend your money on this because it's a pet project and it's something we want to spend money on, irregardless of the ROI, irregardless of the effect that it has on the community or what it brings in terms of value to the people that are funding it. As we went through Dane Scalise's op-ed on Monday, talking about funding, the word he continued to use over and over again is core services. Those are the things that the public, the taxpayers, the residents of New Hanover County, those are the things we actually interface with, the core services. Whether that's departments and agencies like the Register of Deeds, things that we have to interface with. That's a core service. That's where money needs to be spent. Whether it's the New Hanover County Sheriff's Department, which keeps our community safe, which makes us feel safe in our homes, at our place of work, at our businesses. Those are the core services that government needs to focus on. Strip out and cut off all the other nonsense. Focus on the core services. Not all the shiny, sparkly things in the corner that everybody wants to spend money on. The core things that we actually get tangible value from. Things that you can look at and say, yeah, here's the ROI. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year on schools. What's the ROI? Well, we have a public school system that functions and operates. There's your ROI. We spend tens of millions of dollars on law enforcement. What's the ROI? When you have an emergency, you can pick up the phone, call 911, and law enforcement will be at your house. That's the ROI. That's the tangible thing that you can touch, that you can interface with. That's what government needs to be focused on, and it's not. It's a bunch of bureaucrats. It's a bunch of unelected individuals. And it's a bunch of people that are taking advantage of the federal government. I don't blame them for it. If you can go get a job at the federal government researching underwater basket weaving, because that's the degree that you got from a college that you racked up $200,000 in student loan debt for, and you spend all of your days doing research on underwater basket weaving or shrimp fighting in the ocean or some stupid nonsense like that, I don't fault you for taking advantage of that because the skill that you have is unemployable. Private business would never hire you to do that. So the only place to go is the federal government. So it's not their fault. The federal government's opened the door for these positions to exist. The federal government has allowed this kind of useless, unproductive workforce to exist. And no, because I can already see the claims. I'm not saying that every federal government employee is useless. That's not what I'm saying. That's how the left likes to boil this down. Oh, you're attacking federal workers who work really hard. I'm not attacking federal workers who work hard. I'm not attacking the workers at all. I'm saying the federal government itself should not be operating in this manner. They should not be extending their generosity in terms of salary and benefits to individuals that are not providing value for the federal government. Your degree in underwater basket weaving that you now work for the federal government and provide research and studies on at $150,000 a year provides zero value to anybody's life except for your own. That's just a fact. Same thing on the studies researching trans shrimp or whatever stupid BS came out of USAID. The crazy nonsense that they were spending on. Sesame Street in Pakistan? Are you freaking kidding me? Tell me the ROI on that. Tell me what I'm getting as a taxpayer who owes the federal government a boatload of money this year. Tell me what I'm getting out of that as I write my, you know, big check to the IRS. Tell me what I'm getting out of that. Justify to me how that's a good use of my taxpayer dollars. The president continued and followed up on this at his meeting yesterday. He was asked questions by reporters once again, right? Trump's not transparent. He's kicking media out, right? That was the outrage yesterday morning. There's changes to the White House Correspondents Association, changes to the White House press pool. Media's not going to have access to the president. The sky is falling down yesterday morning because of that. So here's a clip from yesterday. During the president's cabinet meeting, you can see all the cameras, you can see all the microphones. Here is 2 minutes of the president going back and forth with the media. Don't forget, though, not transparent, not open to the free press. That's what we know about Donald Trump, right?
I'd like to add that those million people that haven't responded, though, Elon, they are on the bubble. You know, I wouldn't say that we're thrilled about it. You know, they haven't responded. Now, maybe they don't exist. Maybe we're paying people that don't exist. Don't forget, we just got here. This group just got here. But those people are on the bubble, as they say. You know, maybe they're going to be gone. Maybe they're not around. Maybe they have other jobs. Maybe they moved and they're not where they're supposed to be. A lot of things could have happened. I wouldn't say that Biden ran a very tight administration. They spent money like nobody's ever spent money before. Wasted money. The Green New Scam, all of the different things they spent money on. And you've seen that. You've seen that with some of the things that I read in speeches. I read them and people can't believe when I read them. 20 million here, 30 million here for, you know, a little educational course on something. Circumcision, right? Circumcision. $20 million to inform the people of such and such a country on other things and other things other than that. So, yeah, those people are, right now we're trying to find out who those people are that haven't responded. Now, there'll be some agencies, like Marco has people within state that are right now doing very classified, very confidential work, and we understand that. We've talked and, you know, we're being a little more surgical. And Marco's doing a lot of things himself. He's, and some of the secretaries are, we're going to be going to them. We're going to be talking about it today. We're going to ask them to do their own DOGE. In other words, they'll look in their group and I spoke with Lee Zeldin and he thinks he's going to be cutting 65% or so of the people from environmental. And we're going to speed up the process too at the same time. You had a lot of people that weren't doing their job. They were just obstructionists and a lot of people that didn't exist, I guess, Lee, too. You found a lot of empty spots that the people weren't there. They didn't exist.
So that's big news right there that the Lee Zeldin, who's a phenomenal individual, ran for governor of New York, almost won amazingly in the deep blue state that that is, might cut the workforce of EPA by 65%. And what's the result of that going to be? Less bureaucracy, less red tape, and quicker turnaround. So that when a government has to interface with EPA, when somebody like the North Carolina Department of Transportation needs to interface with the EPA to build a bridge or build a road, it doesn't take 7 years for EPA to get their head out of their ass and actually do something. They believe they can continue to operate EPA and Trump ad-libbing here, private conversations with Zeldin. To me, that sounds very realistic and practical. The EPA is where the individual who's working right now is collecting the $150,000 plus a year salary studying underwater basket weaving, because, you know, that's environmental protection. Useful skill to our society. I don't know why this is so controversial. I mean, maybe I'm asking a rhetorical question. But I don't know why this is such an issue. Who is in favor of waste, fraud, and abuse except for the people that know they are taking advantage of the waste, fraud, and abuse? Like, if you're just a regular, everyday American citizen, and stick with me here. If you're just a regular, everyday Joe Schmo, who, again, works your 40-hour-a-week job, busts your rear end to get your job done, keep your bosses happy, to provide for your family. Why would you be against the federal government digging into the copious amounts of money that they spend to try and cut fat, cut waste, and eventually cut taxes? Because that's where the rubber meets the road. When you shrink the size of the federal government, when you cut 65% of EPA, just using that as an example from President Trump, that department no longer needs all of that money. The amount that we spend each and every year can go down dramatically, can reduce significantly. And the result of that is we pay less in taxes, whether it's income tax or all of the other taxes that you are hit on throughout the year. Things on your cell phone bill, your electrical bill, this bill, that bill. Why would you be against that? Now, the claim from some on the left, if you watch CNN or MSNBC, as they've been, you know, crying out their hearts over these federal workers who they claim, you know, Trump is destroying these people's lives. But I just don't understand why you'd be against that. Why are you for waste, fraud, and abuse? Why are you okay with your money being sucked out of your paycheck every 2 weeks to up to Washington, D.C., for them to fund stupid nonsense programs that interact with your life 0% of the time and never will? Why are you okay with the inefficient, slow, bureaucratical process that is the federal government when you have to interact with them? That's what you're paying for. I'm not okay paying for that. If you have as a private citizen, if you're paying for something, a monthly subscription to whatever the service might be, maybe your cell phone bill, and you're constantly having issues with your cell phone provider, what are you going to do? You're going to call and complain a couple of times, see if they can make the issue right. And if not, what are you going to do? You're going to cancel your cell phone subscription with that company and find somebody else that can provide the service that actually works. I think that's a relatively easy, simple example for people to wrap their head around. Because you're paying for something, and in response for that payment, the money that you are giving to that company, you are expecting a high quality service. And if you're not getting that high quality service, if that service isn't working for you, then you make a change. I had an internet company that I was not happy with back a couple of years ago. I called and complained. They were unable to fix the issue in a sufficient manner for what I needed. So what did I do? I canceled and I got a new company to provide internet, because I was expecting high quality service for the $100 a month I was spending on internet. I was not okay with the intermittent nature of the internet that I was receiving, the slow speeds that I was receiving. I called, I complained, they didn't fix the problem, I went somewhere else. How is that any different than your interface with the federal government? The only difference is you don't have a choice. There is no alternative to go to. You are required to pay taxes. Your employer is required to pay taxes out of your paycheck. Or if you're a 1099 contractor, you're required to keep track of everything and pay your taxes in a lump sum at the end of the year or quarterly if you've got that set up. And you don't have a choice whether the federal government works for you or not. You don't have a choice whether it's efficient or you're getting high quality service. You just have to take it because there's no alternative. So again, tell me why you're not in favor of reducing the bloat, the waste, and the fat within the federal government. If there are good things that are happening, does the EPA need to exist? Yeah, probably, in some aspects. Does it need to exist at the level that it does right now? No. Does it need to have the amount of bloat and bureaucracy that it has right now? The answer is no. The EPA can operate as it was created by Congress to provide the services that they do to governments in regards to environmental. They can do that with, at least as we're learning this morning, about 30 or 40% of their current staff. And if they can do that, then that's what they need to do. That's how private business operates. The federal government should be no different. There's this weird analogy, and I've seen some comments online. Yeah, but the federal government isn't private business. Well, first, thank you for your astute political opinion. Thanks for those insights. And that's the issue. That's not an excuse. That's not a good justification as to why government sucks at providing many of the core services that they're responsible for. They should operate more like a business, because if a business doesn't operate well, it shuts down. When the government doesn't operate well, they raise your taxes and steal more of your money. That's not a system that I'm okay with. That's not a system that creates a prosperous middle class, which is, of course, who taxes hurt the most, where inefficiencies and slow government hurts the most, is the middle class. I'm not okay with that. I don't know why anybody is okay with that. But the tears continue to flow. The outrage continues to swarm on social media and cable news and in newspapers. I just can't wrap my head around it. I've got a couple of other little notes in regards to this. This out last night from the Washington Post. The IRS to close more than 120 offices with taxpayer assistance centers. I didn't realize the IRS had more than 120 offices to even close. Doesn't say they're closing all of them. It says they're closing more than 120 offices. Why does the IRS have those regional offices? I can understand having some offices, sure. But as you can probably imagine, there is a lot of offices with very little traffic that comes through it, very little interfacing that goes on with the consumer, the American public, and those need to close. So the IRS is set to close more than 120 offices. That's great. And then this coming out just about 30 minutes ago from Election Wizard, which is a great Twitter account to follow. USAID workers will be given 15 minutes to clear their workspace as the agency gets dismantled. That being reported from the Associated Press this morning. Phenomenal. The culture that has been created, the idea that the federal government is in the business of employing, is in the business of employing people. Like, that's their main goal, their main focus. It's never been a good strategy. It's never been a good idea. And it's finally being dismantled. It's finally being stripped and cut out. And I couldn't be happier. I mean, I really couldn't be happier. I've been talking to people a lot. I've been talking to a whole bunch of people over the last couple of weeks since the Trump administration has been really digging into this stuff. And I've talked to people all across the age spectrum, people my age, individuals in their 60s, and the same thing is being repeated by every single one of them. Never in my lifetime did I think I would see this happen. Never in my wildest dreams did I imagine somebody would actually take the federal government to task. And not just any random person, but the president of the United States, who has come in and said the status quo, the way of doing things, which is a phenomenal government term at all levels. Oh, it's the way we do things. It's the way we do things. It's the way we do things. It's all gone. It's time for the government to get laser focused on what they do. It's time to get laser focused on core services and efficiency. We are at a turning point in our nation right now, strictly from a financial standpoint. Cut all of the politics out of it. Cut all of the BS, D versus R, conservative versus liberal. Get rid of all of that for the premise of this conversation. We are at a financial crossroads right now. We have an unsustainable spending problem. We spend, you've heard the analogy, like drunken sailors. It is completely setting up the United States and future generations for abject poverty and complete and total failure. The federal government has not been smart with its money. The federal government has not been good stewards of our dollars. And that is changing. And it's changing at a very rapid rate. And will there be some issues in the interim? Yeah, absolutely. Will there be some short-term hardships? Absolutely. But in terms of the betterment of our country, in terms of the benefit of our future, our children, our grandchildren, it's got to be done. Because the system we have right now is broken. It does not work for the people, and it costs way too much money. I'm so glad that Trump is continuing to be laser focused on this. I am so appreciative of him, individuals like Elon Musk, and all of Trump's cabinet's picks that have come on board with this and said, yeah, we're going to root out the fraud, the waste, the abuse within our departments. We should be incredibly grateful and thankful for what's going on right now. It's going to continue to be a major story. It will probably won't be one of the biggest stories of this entire administration. And as I've mentioned over the last couple of weeks, once in a lifetime, maybe once in the history of America in terms of change, generational change, change the likes of which our country has never seen. But it needs to happen. And it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be tough. There's going to be people affected. Absolutely. I don't take any of that for granted or take any of that away or try to minimize any of that. But when you do things like the federal government has in regards to spending money frivolously, not being able to balance a budget and racking up trillions of dollars in debt, there comes a point where you have to make tough decisions. The same way that if you or I or anybody else listening this morning goes out and borrows a whole bunch of money from a whole bunch of different people and stops paying it back, there are consequences. You lose your home. You lose your car. You get your wages garnished. That's the result. Actions have consequences. And the actions of the federal government have put all of us in a very tough financial situation. And it's going to take some time. There's going to be hardships. There's going to be issues. But unfortunately, desperate times calls for desperate measures. And that's where we are right now. We'll continue to keep an eye on this major shakeup that's happening in Washington, D.C. It'll be a continuing threat on the program, seemingly for the foreseeable future here in regards to the Trump administration. I want to thank everybody for joining us on this Thursday edition. I want to remind you that you can get access to show notes and more by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. Look forward to chatting with everybody tonight during our Patreon chat. That's happening at 7 o'clock. If you're not already subscribed, patreon.com/Nick Craig. We'll chat with you tonight for the Patreon members, and we're back tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.